What is up, everyone? Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Gamecast. I am one of your hosts, Kenny, and with me is Tess.
Hello, everybody.
And we are back for episode 82. Yes, damn. It's amazing we've gotten this far when you think about it. This 82 episodes, that's pretty dope. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. And then some of the milestones that we've had. I just want to, you know, flex a little bit. It's all good.
Flex. Zone.
We are back, right? We are back for another week, and just kind of want to reflect a little bit about the week coming up to this point. I've been mad busy. I've been writing a lot of articles for GameSpot, and I've been on the front page like over and over and over. Like, I have an article up now. If you're listening to this, you're probably going to see it tomorrow. But I got to interview. There's a new movie coming out tomorrow, so Friday, April 15th. Called Choose or Die, and it's basically a horror thriller about a video game that is basically altering reality. And I got to interview, not only did I review that, so that article is going to come up tomorrow, but I also got to interview the director and kind of talk to him about what went into creating the game for the film, because they did a really good job. I don't know if you saw, have you seen the movie Stay Alive with Frankie Muniz?
No.
Back in 06. Okay. So it's better than that. But we kind of made reference to that and some other things. And so that interview is actually on GameSpot. Go check that out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've been doing a lot of writing and dealing with a lot of allergies. Like,
yeah.
It's just this pollen every freaking where. Like,
yeah.
Covered all over everything. And you know, I thought like we cut the grass today, and I thought that I had my mask on and I had like goggles, and I was like, all right, I'm good. I'm going to be, you know, I'm protected. And I wasn't, I really wasn't. And, my eyes are like burning, and just, it's so annoying. Like, trees are just skeeting all over the place. Like,
yeah.
It's not fun for me.
It's not. And they're out to get us. They have a plan.
No, and happening.
To be fair, I can't get mad at the Gaia for this, because the Gaia is like, y'all have been mistreating me. I was here to help y'all live, and you're destroying me. So basically, the plants and the trees are kind of like blue gendering us. Like, they're just like, look, we got to take them out any way we can. Oh, that person has allergies. They're weak. Let's go. And they're just trying to take us out one by one. That's just how it is. And we're just doing our best to survive, you know, thanks to Zizol.
Right? Like, M. Night, he knew what he was talking about.
That, no, totally.
Still a horrible film, but he knew what he was talking about.
I ain't watch it. I already knew.
Oh, gosh. Don't. It's just so bad. I don't understand how you get, like, really good actors to act terribly. Like, I don't understand that.
He has a skill. I have to say, if M. Night Shyamalan wins one thing, it is the ability to make amazing actors look their worst. He's so good at it.
I don't get it.
That's a talent, but that's serious talent.
It is. And he's brilliant in a way, but it just doesn't come together the way it should.
Nope.
But I'm not going to rag on him all day. I was able to catch up on some stuff. One of the shows I caught up on, we're actually going to talk about a little bit later, but yeah, I have a hard time keeping up with everything. It's funny because I have a back, you know, like my video games have a backlog. I have a backlog of shows that I need to finish. I haven't started the second season of Witcher yet.
Me neither.
I haven't finished the Boba Fett show. And then, you know, I look up and like Stranger Things season 4 is about to drop. And I'm like, oh man, like I just can't do it. And then instead of when I have free time going back and watching one of these shows, I start a brand new anime. Ain't that something?
Yep, it's true. And I have my reasons too. About, you know, I can't do it all the time. I get a lot of headaches, and sometimes I just have to stop. But yeah, I've done the same thing. I've caught up on stuff, and then I just haven't watched other things. And we've talked about this, because some things are more mentally, you need to be more mentally involved. Right. And I told you how, like, I couldn't watch a lot of anime and a lot of subtitled stuff because I didn't have the reading capabilities because of the head injury and everything.
Right.
And so, you know, there was some reason at least why I couldn't catch up on certain things, but I have been able to watch more. I've been able to do more. And just like you, instead of like catching up on, you know, like the things that are on our list that we're like, okay, we need to watch this because I know I need to watch Witcher. I think there's just this anxiety because I'm just like, oh, I have to be so involved. I love Henry Cavill and I need to be involved and I right. can't do it. And then so like I end up watching new stuff. Like I completely have over and over and over again been watching Hajimete no Otsukai on Netflix. They're calling it Old Enough, but it really translates to like My First Errand, the little Japanese show. It's like it's a long running show in Japan. It's okay. not new. I've heard about it before. I had heard about it. Actually, I don't even remember. I don't know who told it to me, but it's just such this cute idea. You know, they send little kids. We're not talking about, you know, 7-8 year old. We're talking about 2-year-olds. They send, you know, kids on the ages of like between 2 and 5 years old on errands by themselves. Wow. I mean, completely by themselves. And they have cameramen or camera people. There's also camera women and camera days who are running around and, you know, filming them. And, you know, they have to be kind of discreet so that the kids don't realize that they're being filmed. Because once they realize they're being filmed, then it's kind of like, why are you filming? Like, why are you following? You know, those kind of things. Like kids right. aren't dumb. They're just kind of, they're easily fooled. So it's such an adorable show. And I literally have like cried on every episode because the kids start crying and I understand where they're coming from because I was a kid. Anyway, I could literally watch that show all day. I can turn it on and ignore it while I'm like washing dishes or, you know, crying somewhere or just trying to sleep. Or I can watch it and just, I mean, I'm enthralled by these little children, literally. A 2-year-old walks from their house and by themselves with like a cute little sign that says, I'm crossing the street. Like you need to stop your car. Like, and goes to the store and buys things. They can't even read, but they know what they need to pick up because they remember it has a picture on it. Or, you know, or they're told by their parents, please ask the store clerk for help. You know, things like this. It's just, and it's so cute what these kids can do. And, you know, Japan is a society that encourages children to be independent from an early age. I mean, it's the same thing in Africa. I'm not even joking. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah, totally.
You know, it's totally the same thing. Like, I watched this, loving this, and I was like, okay, I remember being like 4 years old in Ghana and like running down the street and going and buying soda and chocolate. And stuff, you know, like with no one with me. I can't even count the money. I'm American. You know, like I don't know what I'm doing, right?
That reminds me of when I was living in Germany. I was older than 2, but there was just because my dad being in the military, mm-hmm. At that time we were at war, so he was out of Germany. Right. And so I was with my mom and my brother. My mom would have my brother when I would come home from school. And so then I would have to do other things. And some of it was actually going to the store or going somewhere. Yeah. And I remember like at that point, I did know German. I don't anymore, but I did know German. Right. Or at the very least enough to get around. Mm-hmm. And what it was like was when you would go to certain places, depending on where you were, like they made, I guess, like allowances for mm-hmm. people who lived on like on bases or stuff like that. So there would be like a McDonald's with some English and mostly German. And then some places mm-hmm. just all German. But that feeling of like, oh, you're independent. Like, oh, I'm young and I can do this thing. But then at the same time, this is a foreign country. Like, there's a bit of a, you know, and I had to go through so much, I don't know, I don't want to say training, but my parents had to kind of like, all right, you know, it went beyond just don't talk to strangers type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this show is very interesting. Like, I think I'm going to check this out and see how that,
because I can understand.
Oh, word? Okay, yeah. I'm going to have to check it out.
So you like literally you turn it on and it's just the cutest thing. And one of the greatest, everybody knows, like I speak a little Japanese, not a lot. I am literally at a like 3-year-old level. And the reason I can say 3-year-old is because I can understand the kids when they're talking. Like if you're adult, I'm like, okay, screw it. But like the kids are talking, I'm like, yes, I am your friend. Like talk to me. I can communicate with you. But the best thing is that they have subtitles on the like, because, you know, kids are hard to understand.
Right.
And so they have the subtitles in Japanese. And on top of it, they're in hiragana and katakana. They're not in kanji at all when the children speak. So it's easier to read. So like if you are learning Japanese, and everybody knows that like even little kids don't learn kanji until they're in a higher grade.
That's a nice touch.
Yeah, you just kind of don't learn it. I mean, unless your parents or somebody's teaching it to you, but like in school, like they can't read it. There's even an episode where the kids are like, yeah, we can't read this, so we don't care. And they keep walking. But when something was in hiragana, they were able to read it. So the subtitles are in hiragana for the children. And so I'm like trying to read them as quickly as I can. And I'm like, okay, totally. I get them. So it's like a learning. I'm like, this was the show that I needed to be able to learn Japanese better. Instead of like repeating lines from anime and then somebody be like, where'd you hear that? Because nobody speaks that. Anyway, yeah, check it out. Episodes are 10 minutes long. So yeah.
That's what's up. I'm going to add it. I've been watching, I actually started watching Vinland Saga, and it's interesting being a Japanese animated show based on like the Vikings. Like that's just a very interesting hodgepodge of things going on, but it's pretty dope so far. And it kind of, it's weird because the upcoming movie, The Northmen, looking at the trailers, it reminds me a lot of this anime because it's essentially a revenge story with a child who grows up to be like a dope Viking to go back and take down the people that were responsible for, you know, killing family members. And in this case with Vinland Saga, it's different because the kid is forced to work with the person who killed his father. And so there's this weird dynamic because he's like, he wants to challenge him to a duel. And he's like, well, you're going to have to do something great on the battlefield before I challenge you. And he's like, all right, fine. And so he has to like, basically, and he's doing it not just to duel him, but to actually improve his fighting skills. But he's working with the person that he wants to take down. So it's an interesting dynamic within the show. Beautifully animated, pretty dope. It's old. It's not like new or anything. But just to let you know where I'm at with stuff, I also finished watching all of Tokyo Revengers, and I'm extremely upset that they ended it the way they did. You don't, it's a dope cliffhanger, but it's such a hard, like, everyone I know who watched the show went straight to the manga. I'm like, I'm not doing this. I have too much stuff to read and do as is. I'm going to wait. At the same time, though, I hate you all because you can't just end the show the way they did. Tokyo Revengers is great. Like, really good. Definitely check that out as well. I believe that is on, that's on Crunchyroll. Yeah, okay. All the stuff is on Crunchyroll. But yeah. One of the shows that I did catch up on was The Promised Neverland, which is what we're going to be talking about today. If you are familiar with our show, we talked about the first season of The Promised Neverland and how we liked the show, despite some racist depictions of black people.
Right.
And we liked, you know, the way the story was going and stuff like that. So I had known that, like, the second season was on other apps, and I didn't have access to it. But now that Crunchyroll and Funimation are basically one thing, The Promised Neverland is on there. So I was like, oh, let me check it out. So I actually binged it all last weekend. It's mad short. Like, it feels, you know how like we felt with Game of Thrones, the final season? It feels like that in terms of being rushed. And apparently, I haven't read the manga, but apparently a lot of people were pissed because of that. When I heard that people were upset at the show, I thought it was because they made some changes that, you know, they made one character this way or that way, or, you know, they altered. Because one of the things we talked about was that we wanted them to change the show for the better in terms of how they depicted certain characters. So I expected, like, fans of the manga to be upset because they made changes. And you know how people get, you know, you made this character black. Oh, my God, I can't stand you. That blah, 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 right? So that's what I expected. But when I saw it, I was like, oh. And this is from someone who hasn't read the manga.
Right.
I totally understand now. just to let you know, we're spoiling the entire second season. So
totes.
It's been out for a year. Yeah. But we're definitely spoiling everything. But if you don't mind that, feel free to listen. It starts out with the children. So the first season was the kids found out that they are on farms. They're basically being farmed and groomed to be like, to be as smart as they can be, because these monsters or demons, they eat children, but they eat the smart ones. Like, their brains are like a delicacy. And what you find out in the second season is that the monsters deteriorate over time. And so they need to eat these children, especially the smart ones, in order to stay stay cognizant. If not, they'll like degrade into like wild beasts and like kill everyone. Like, they just, you know, they don't know who they are. They don't have a higher sense of being anymore. And so beyond the fact that they just like children and like eating humans, they also are doing so to kind of preserve themselves. You also find out that there was apparently a promise that was made thousands of years ago. This is kind of like the, you know, Planet of the Apes, because the kids didn't know that they were on Earth. They thought that maybe they were taken somewhere else, or, mm-hmm. you know, they weren't sure what happened outside of the farms, because that's all they know for their entire lives. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say it's like Planet of the Apes is because you find out that, no, they've been on Earth. It's just been thousands of years since this agreement was made, where the humans and the demons were like, you know what? You stay on your side, I stay on our side, and here are some humans that you can kind of, you know, grow and whatnot, and you'll be able to feed yourselves and whatnot. You just stay on your side, though, and mm-hmm. we'll stay on ours. Mm-hmm. And so there's this whole cycle of abuse where, you know, the brightest children aren't eaten. They're made into, you know, at least the girls are made into mothers who go out and raise the children to be eaten. You know, there's a human caretaker. His family was deemed the gatekeepers of, so like there's a door between the human world and the demon world, and they're supposed to maintain that balance. You also find out that there are some demons who don't need to eat children to stay themselves. And the hierarchy of the demon world were like, no, they were like, we want you to, ideally what they could have done is given their blood to the other demons and that would have sustained them and they wouldn't have to eat people. But because they wanted to, you know, the queen and king and whatnot, they want to keep kind of like a stranglehold on all the other demons. Mm-hmm. They were able to, their farms, they have a chokehold on productivity. And so they can say, well, you guys can get this, you know, these many whatever children, and you guys can get these many children. And they can kind of keep everybody in line based on that. Because if you don't do what we say, we'll take the children away and, you know, you'll end up eating your own family type of thing. Mm-hmm. And so there's all these different conflicts, and it's really, really interesting. And we just fly right through all that. Like, we just beeline straight to point Z. And I'm like, wow. Just really? Like, there's so many different intricate things in terms of, like, the idea that, like, some demons are good. Not all of them want to eat humans. There's a conflict that arises between two of the main characters, Emma and Ray, in terms of like what they should do, because Ray developed a poison that would kill them all, essentially make them degrade extremely fast.
That was Norman.
Oh, that was Norman. Okay, my fault. Mm-hmm. So that was Norman, and she was like, she didn't want to do that because they were asking, when they left the farm, they were rescued by two demons, one of which happened to be the girl who had the blood that allowed her to stay herself without having to eat flesh. And mm-hmm. so they were like, oh, there's good demons out here. We don't need to be, you know, whatever. They also have families and children and all this other stuff. So maybe there's another way. But Norma's like, screw all that. They've been, you mm-hmm. know, doing experiments on us and all this other stuff. So you have kind of like an Xavier Magneto type thing going on. Mm-hmm. Really cool, interesting stuff. Nope. Two episodes later, and we're past that. Moving on, I'm like, wait, the conflict. You resolved it. That's it. Like mm-hmm. everyone's cool. Like,
yep.
Yeah, it just flies by. But like, you watched it a while ago.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts when you were watching this?
And so I just watched it again, and I read it. I read it so long, like, right. So, and I had said I wasn't going to watch it, but I did. So, it's horrible. Okay. I'm just going to throw that out there. It's so bad, because it's like, if you've ever seen something rushed this badly, you're just like, what the, like, why did you even bother? There are other animes out there where they never completed a second season, or where they just didn't do something. It just didn't do it, and the manga kept going.
Right.
And in this situation, it is like, I do not understand how the first season, can't remember how many episodes it was, forgive me. I just know that this one was 11 episodes, I believe.
Yeah.
But the first season was so good. I mean, everybody was talking about, like, hey, y'all, this might be one of the best animes, like, we all talk about, okay, you know, Evangelion is this and
right,
XYZ, you know, that like things that are monumental and they're in their genre and whatever, and they mean something, you know, Cowboy Bebop, XYZ. This was gunning to be one of those. I mean, the depth of the first season, and I'm not even going to talk about the manga right now. I'm going to go there. But for the anime, it was animated really well, except obviously for what we talked about with Kurone.
Right.
And we've discussed that. We can discuss it again in a little bit. But it was animated extremely well. The amount of fear that the children felt, we felt it too in that first moment, especially when you first saw the demons, because it was so unexpected. We had no idea that this was going to be what we were going to get. Right. It was like the terror that they felt, which was animated so well, was also in us. Like if you watch that, you were terrified too. You weren't like, it's not like, oh, the demon scared you, but I'm scared because they're scared type thing. It was just so good. I mean, even to go as far as the part where Mother Isabella broke what's her face's leg, Emma's leg, like things that happened in the show were just so good, and they were animated well, and the pacing was well, and it was voice acted well. Everything was great. And then within the first episode of the second season, they've like blown through chapters of the manga. And I'm sitting here like, okay, I've read the manga. I read the manga before I watched the show. So I'm sitting here like, okay, y'all just skipped over all of this stuff and you just made it. The difficulty was, let me put it this way. The stakes were very high in the first season. Right. It was so much work to convince Mama Isabella that only one of the kids knew about the monsters, right? Like, we know that we find out that Isabella always, she knew that that Ray knew for a while. Like, she kept Ray's secret because, you know, Ray's her son, whatever. But anyway, Ray knew for a long time. She knew that Ray knew and let it go. But when what's it called happened with the teddy bear, when Connie was, you know, I'm putting up air quotes, adopted, she knew that another kid knew. She just didn't know how many. So if they were hiding how many kids knew about the thing, they were hiding the fact that they were planning an escape. They were hiding the fact that they were asking for, you know, tools and doing things that would lead to their escape. Like all of the things that the kids were doing. And mind you, these are genius children. These are children that are on the level of smarts of, you know, like these are like, I hate to use him as an example. Maybe I'll just use somebody else. Okay. Like, so these are, what's the Microsoft guy's name again? I have word recall. I can't get his name.
Oh, Bill Gates.
Okay. So you've got Bill Gates okay, I'm going to use him. Elon Musk. I don't want to use him, but he's still very smart. You know, you've got him. You've got,
is okay. He though?
Is he though? You're right. You're right.
We got like, you know, we got some Einsteins. There's we got Einsteins. A bunch of MacGyvers out here. Like,
MacGyvers. There's Isaac Newtons. There's Neil deGrasse Tysons. Like, there's a lot of smart. These kids are genius level, right? But then you, and a lot of the time, everything is from the point of view of these genius children. So you're sitting here like, okay, these kids are smart. They're going to do stuff that me as the viewer cannot do because I'm not that smart. But then you get reminded, like, especially in the moment where Isabella broke Emma's leg, you're also reminded that Isabella is smart. Krone was smart. I mean, the simple part when Krone was chasing them, when they were playing tag and she caught all the kids, that was proof that having another mother in the place was going to destroy their plan. Like my point in trying to say all this is that season one truly set up how difficult what they intended on doing really was. And then you get to season two, besides the fact that it has 17 zillion pacing problems because it's only 11 episodes and they cut out half of the story that's integral to what they're really doing. It doesn't seem that hard. They get into the woods. They get chased by the one Wild Demon, and then the Seekers, or Pursuers, okay? And the Pursuers the Pursuers were dispatched of quite simply, you know, by Sanju and Mujica, right? It moves too quickly.
For all the setup, for all the struggle, for all the ingenuity it took to leave.
Yes.
To get to the places that they need to go, to even just the montage of them learning how to like use different weapons and hunt and all this other stuff. It's just blown by. Like, it's almost like, because in the first season, we saw them take the time to explain and go over how we're going to do all the things. And when something, you know, happened that kind of diverted their attention or changed their plans, how they had to respond to it in a way that was believable and immediate. It wasn't like an ongoing, you know, there wasn't like a flash forward and they were already settled. It was like, no, we need to get through this now. Whereas the second season, you know, just them getting out of the woods, it was extremely convenient. They were, and not to say that this didn't happen in the manga where they were saved, but in the manner of which it happens in the show, it's so quick that there's no more tension. All the tension is gone.
It's completely gone. That, you know, that's where, what I'm saying, like, the stakes are dropped. The stakes were so high in season one, and by season two, there's no more stakes because everything is just so simple. The fact that you had no idea what the great outdoors contained. You had no idea. You didn't know if there were those demons that we saw in episode one are scary. Their shape, everything about them was scary. Those long, long fingernails in the long fingers, like all of in the fact that the guy, his tongue was hanging out because he wanted to eat Connie so bad, but his job was transport. You know what I'm saying? Like, that stuff is literally, it should give you nightmares. Like, as for the kids, I don't mean for us necessarily, but it should scare you. So the simple fact that they literally left the safety of those walls and went into the forest, you don't know what's out there. So for them to simply go into the forest and then they were pursued by a specific specific people, you can assume that people are going to chase you. But there was barely any fear about wild demons. And that's insanity. Because I know good and well that if somebody dumped me in the forest of Montana, I would be so scared that a bobcat, let alone a black bear, let alone a moose, is going to take me out. And so none of that occurred. And this is for the show, because there are things that did happen in the manga, and I'll get to that. But that was literally gone. And then they just continue to kind of do things that are so simple. Like, they use the pen. They use the pen, and then all of a sudden, boom, they know how to use the pen. Where in the first season, they didn't know what the hell they were doing with the pen.
Right.
So all of a sudden, they turn the pen on, and they're like, this is where we need to go, and this is how we're going to get there. Whereas in the first season, they were confused as hell. And then I'm bringing the manga here. In the manga, it's just not that simple. It's not. So anywho, they do all that. They go to this shelter. And they get into the shelter, and then they're there for 3 days. I don't even know how many days it was. It's not very long. And then, boom, the shelter gets blasted by some humans that seem to just have no purpose whatsoever. Like,
that was so odd to me.
So odd. They just show up. They bomb the place. They're trying to kidnap these kids and telling the kids, you guys need to just stop. But then they were willing to kill the kids, even though these kids are supposed to be, you know, precious to the demon. So it's like, so then these adult humans, which again, we've never known any other adult human, like, this is just show, I'm not bringing in the manga, but we've never known any other adult humans to exist except for the mothers. And in that case, we only knew that there was one mama, and that there was one sister Krone, and that there was one grandmother. We don't know, you know what I mean? Like, obviously we understand that babies have to come from somewhere. I'm assuming that, yes, men exist somewhere, but like, the kids don't know that. And so then these men show up in army gear and are like trying to blow up the place. And then the kids are like, well, what the heck do we do? And then they're running. And then the guy says, there's all the shelters are all built the same. There's another exit. And then the kids are like, oh shit, there's another exit. And then they start running. And it was just like, is how easy is like, what?
All of this is mad convenient. The because you think about it, like, okay, the shelter is there and someone made it there. They built it there for these kids to escape. The whole pin thing is kind of like the freaking golden ticket. Like it's supposed to point you in a way to escape. And so someone's made it there before. But then at the same time, it's like, it's not much of a shelter because these people have found them. And then you found multiple shelters. So you're saying that this is happening. This is happening. But then in the midst of you saying that, you allow the kids to leave out the exit that you talked about. Mm-hmm. Like what I'm saying is like, everything is so convenient to the point of is being nonsensical. Because I'm hunting children, like you said, they have bombs, they have automatic, you know, rifles, no sets of traps. I don't know why they didn't have any handcuffs or anything, but nothing to actually catch the children. It was like, we're going to shoot you and drag you back, or you're just going to walk back, whatever. But then when they go and they find the place exactly, so they find the place that they're at, despite the fact that there's multiple shelters, they just find this one. And then they're like, oh, the way we got in here was because there was a second entrance. So instead of blowing the first entrance, couldn't you just sneak in through the back entrance? Because you didn't have to blow that one up. You just snuck in. But then in the midst of that, you allow the kids to get out through that entrance. Now, they do catch them later, but then all the racket that they cause, a giant demon, you know, comes out and eats them. And it's like, this is really convenient. Because I was with the first, and granted, the first season didn't really have a large body count. But I expected, I mean, we had people who lost ears. You know what I'm saying? I expected some type of wounding or something. Mm-hmm. And I know this is a group of kids, so, you know, it's not going to be Lords of the Fly. But at the very least, I'm like, this is very easy. You have, what, 12 kids? No one got lost? Like, no one got hurt? No one got, you know what I'm saying? Like, all this turmoil, and everyone's just like, yeah, we're good. Yeah. Right. And then on top of that, they speed past, like, because, like, as the soldiers are fighting the monster and, like, shooting, and, like, there's smoke everywhere, and they just run into the woods again. And then all of a sudden, we flash to them being out and about for, I guess, a year?
Yeah.
And they have, like, clothing that they've stolen from demons to look like demons and, like, just casually buying food. Like, what is happening?
Yeah, casually buying in the market, in the demon market, hiding in plain sight. And then this
is what really gets easy.
Yeah, everything's so easy. So easy. Like, they're not even okay, so here's what's really bothersome. We remember the demons from the beginning, the scary ass demons. And then you remember the demons that chased them into the woods and chased them while they were in the woods in the first place. And now you go to them a year and a half later, and they're walking around in a demon town disguised. And what do you think of all the demons that you see? They're kind of human-like.
Right.
Like, in size, in stature, they're not that menacing. And obviously, you know, the author and artist at this point, because I did read that the author and the artist are not the same people.
Right.
And so they, at this point in time, are clearly trying to convey that, oh, demons are just like us. They're just another set of us. And we need to be understanding and heartfelt towards that. They're just trying to live, just like we are just trying to live. And I find that in complete stark contrast to where we started. Like, it doesn't make sense, because now I feel like, and this is almost kind of the same thing as like that movie Brave. It's two different stories that they put in one. Like, you could have just kept going with the whole menacing evil type thing instead of going this route, because what this route did, and I'm not saying that this route is wrong. What I am saying is that when you chose this route, you should have stayed congruent. It doesn't make sense that all of a sudden demons are just like completely changed, because from this point out, you barely see any of those demons that look like what, you know, the ones we were truly scared of before.
Right.
They're just regular ass people. Regular ass motherfucker. I mean, I'm sorry, but it's so jarring.
Yeah,
it's so wrong.
It seems like two different anime. It seems like
totes.
And I think, and you know what, it, if it was longer, at the very least, I think that would have been better, because maybe they went to a place that's like deep in the demon territory. So like the outskirts, the people who have been feeding on, because you can even have that angle. The people who have been feeding on humans the most are the most twisted. I'll take that. That makes sense. Because and even, you know what I'm saying? Like, 'cause even in the market, they're like fighting over, not fighting, but they're bartering over like the hands,
food,
you know, they
sell
like the jar of hands or whatever. And it's tiny. It's like he holds a jar of hands like in his palm. You know what I mean? And so the idea that maybe that they are, they don't look the same because they don't get the best of whatever. But then the contrast should be different then. It should be that the people that are in the market look worse. Like they're closer to dissolving or, you know, turning into those wild demons more so than the ones that are in, at the farm. Why are they menacing? You know what I mean?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Weird.
And that's what I'm saying. It's just so incongruent that the story really does fall apart. And then they have the nerve to bring back Norman in this moment. And Norman is basically a mafia boss at this time. And, you know, he has a group of people who look at him like a god creature. And then he, just like you said earlier, he wants to kill all the demons. And then they don't, Emma doesn't want to. Ray is completely disappeared from the whole story at this point. Like, Ray is so unnecessary. And Ray was such a driving force in the first part of the series, because if you remember, it was Emma versus Norman, because, you know, Norman was, let me put it this way. It was Emma versus Ray, because Ray's like, I'll escape with the two of you. It was Norman versus Ray, because Norman also realized that Ray was feeding information to Isabella. It was Emma versus Norman, because Norman is in love with Emma, but so he doesn't want to disappoint her. So he's willing to do anything that Emma wants. And Emma is idealistic to a fault. Emma's idealism is going to get people killed. Like, you can't be that, you know, but then Emma always wins. And when we discussed this last year, I believe I had said something about like Emma's characterization and like this, like redheaded little, like, you know, white looking girl wins, like, you know, anything she wants goes, and how it ends up turning into the Emma show. Because it does. It turns into the Emma show, where which is so crazy, because you have an amazing character like Ray, who, for me, and this is just me getting a little bit cultural, but sometimes I notice when there are these animes that are that look very multicultural, they have a tendency to, when it comes to the person who looks most Japanese and behaves like most Japanese, especially like a man, is almost always playing second, third, fourth fiddle to another character who's typically like white representing.
Yeah.
And so it's a little annoying, because like Ray ends up being, you know, this super deep thinker, like, you know, what's his face off of Naruto, but Shikamaru, but he also has like these really nihilistic views, and he's he also has like some, you know, not ill will, but like he's not doing what's right for his family. He's doing things for himself. And that's a little upsetting, but again, that goes into a lot of the things that we spoke about like race in this show, like the way that they depicted Kurone as like, you know, minstrel, and then they named the little black girl Jemima, you know, all of that stuff, which is like, it's obviously racist, because there are other people online who have called it out too. And it is, no, I don't think that there's any way to, we can't push that under the rug. I really do think that the artist is mentally fucked up. Like, because that was just wrong. And because remember when I said there is literally, after I read the manga, I said there is literally no purpose to Kurone's features. There's no reason for it. And then to go as far as to name the little black girl Jemima, it just didn't make any sense. So moving on from that, like, I don't want to cross the point that I'm trying to get to. But what I was saying is the first season so clearly had these amazing conflicts, because it was, like I said, Emma versus Ray versus Norman, Emma versus Norman, then all three of them versus Isabella, and then like, then the monsters. And Isabella is also doing her own little thing versus not just the monsters, but also versus grandma, because Isabella's not telling anybody that first Ray is her effing son, And also that, like, she knows that Ray knows stuff and she's not telling, and they have certain protocol as to and how they do things. Right. So everybody's breaking rules. And it's so amazing in the first season. And in the second season, none of that exists. Ray is such an amazing character, and he literally disappears because it becomes the Emma show. All of Emma's desires about, you know, doing X, Y, and Z are all in the forefront. If Emma wants it, it happens. Even Norman, who's trying to kill all the demons, which is, I mean, honestly, that's pretty awesome. I'm like, Norman, you are 13 years old. You have proven to be the genius of geniuses. And he has made a plan to literally murder all the demons. It's amazing, but it's genocide. It's wrong, but he's Thanos right now. And a lot of people were kind of like, you know, Thanos might be doing something horrible because we're losing the people we love, but he had a good reason behind it. He didn't want to do it. He did it because he thought it was best. And that's because, you know, he hadn't met T'Challa yet, who would convince him otherwise. But my point is that's Norman, right? Norman is about to become a genocidal maniac. This is what he wants. It's going to work. And he's going to, by God, make this world that they have been born into habitable and safe for the people that he loves, right? Wrong. Because why? He looks into Emma's eyes and says, I can't disappoint you. Wanted to curse there.
He didn't do that. No, because he is because honestly, he told her that. Like, he was like, yeah, well, I'll give you because the goal for her was like, if I can get this one particular person that had the special blood or whatever to make them not have to eat people, then they won't have the farms anymore. And he brought up a really good point. He was like, what makes you think that we'd be accepted in the human world? If they let us, you know, be subjugated to this type of treatment, or just subjugated, period. For the most part, I would see them sending us back. Like, no, we have a peace treaty. You need to go over there and die so we don't have to do it. You know what I'm saying? We don't have to do it. So he makes it that point, but he's like, you know what? Go ahead and find this demon. If she can make things right, then I'll let it go. And then as soon as she's out of town, he's like, yeah, we're blowing it up anyways. We're going to go through it.
Right.
What changed his mind was seeing the children, you know, and him having to actually go and stab them to death, because he's like, you know, they're not, I don't want them to escape. And one of the guys, the grandfather, had the blood that could help people. And so he's like, I'm going to go kill them. And then actually doing it, because remember, he's still a kid.
Yes.
And not wanting to do that. So I kind of understood why he pivoted there. The problem, though, is that everybody, any fine points that are made against Emma vanishes
immediately,
period. Not because they want to please her, but just because, like you said, they've centered her. Even Ray is like, you know what? What you said makes no sense, but I'm gonna go along. You know, I'm gonna go along with it. Cause you know, why
you're
not?
Emma.
Right. And then, like, he's like, you know what? It makes no sense. We have no guarantees. We have no, but yeah, I'm gonna do it. It's cool. Like, that's, and it's everybody, even the person who rescues them. It's like, you know what? This doesn't make sense for us to go and try to rescue all the kids all by ourselves and all this other stuff. We need to, you know, get an army together. And granted, they do eventually, but it's like, this doesn't make any sense, but we're going to do it anyways, because this is what you, apparently this is what you want to do. So let's go ahead and do that. And it's like,
Emma's
no. And I'm not, and here's the thing. I'm not upset with them eventually taking her side. I'm not upset with that, because ideally the way they portray the characters, you don't want the genocidal thing to happen. They make it so that it would be at odds with what the audience wants. My problem is that it's wiped away quickly. It's just like, no one bumps heads. Like, I was expecting a fight, you know, things to get physical, maybe with the Norman's group, who are like all, you know, they're basically the X-Men of the group with, you know, special abilities. I was expecting them to get into it with the good demons, like, once they saw them, like, have beef, they sat around the fire. Like,
And did you hear what's her face? I forget her name, but she's like, I want to kill demons, but, you know, because the boss doesn't want to anymore, I just want what the boss wants. You are supposed to be a maniacal killer. You were literally eating a demon leg, a smoked demon leg, and you just gonna sit there and be like, okay, well, it makes absolutely no sense.
She broke a whole table with her feet.
Yep.
Because she thought that Emma might have come to tell Norman not to do it. She was like, oh, wait, why are you guys here again? Oh, you're not going to tell him not to do it, right? Because I would kill you all right now. Like, that's essentially what happened. And it was like, oh, wait, you don't want to do it? All right, cool. We good. Like, no. Have some conflict.
And yeah, it doesn't happen because it would have been so beautiful to see this Norman, who he has become, and knowing good and well that, like, deep down in his heart, he loves Emma. Like, he used to literally love her. He did anything she wanted. It would be so wonderful to see them at odds. It would be so wonderful if this was longer, if the story was longer, and we watched them growing up and them being at odds, because this had a lot of the bones of what's that movie, Hunger Games. Because like in Hunger Games, one of the themes about was Katniss figuring out if she was in love with Peeta or in love with Gale. And one of the interesting things about their triangle was that Katniss and Peeta were the two that actually experienced the games. And Gale never did. Gale never had to go into the arena and kill other children. He just watched it on TV like everybody else. And so he didn't have the same trauma that Peeta and Katniss had when they came back out. And that's something that Katniss told him, because when he was sitting there like, we're going to destroy everybody in the Capitol. Because remember, Katniss and Gale had said together before she went into the games, like, they hated everybody in the Capitol. And now he still has that same view, especially because Katniss has been hurt. You know, this is a girl that he clearly loves, and she's hurt and changed. And so he even more wants to destroy the Capitol for what they're doing. And she's like, there's not all bad people there. Like, I've been there. They sheltered me. They've helped, like that kind of stuff, you know? And so that's the same position that Norman is Gale and Emma's Katniss. And I was like, okay, so these are similar bones that we've seen in other stories. What are you guys going to do about it? And then they just end it. It's just so fast. So one of the things that, you know, we were just talking about with, you know, Norman trying to stab the dude. Okay, none of that happens. A lot of the shit. So I'm just going to put it to you guys right now. None of that shit happens. It doesn't happen in the manga. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. It doesn't exist. It's all stupidity and fluff for the camera. It doesn't exist. This season has made anime original stuff. And there are anime original things all over the place, okay? That none of this happens in the manga. And so I recommend anybody who is extremely disappointed, go read the manga. Mind you, I've already told you, I've already said it in our last thing, the manga's terrible. I still hold this to this day. The first half, the first part of this thing is perfect until they leave the farms, until they escape. There's some really good stuff. Again, I'll get there, because what we were going to talk about was just like the way they ended it. I think we should just get that out of the way right now.
Right.
So he doesn't do the genocidal plan anymore. Mujica comes and saves the majority of the people by giving them blood. Sanju cuts off his arm. Like, all kinds of crazy stuff happens where they save the people of the town and whatever, right? And then basically want to make some threats and say, you know, that was us. And then you find out, okay, the other door, the door to the human world is back at
Grace.
Grace Field or whatever. So they need to go back to the farm. So they just need to do all this stuff and they need help and just whatever. And so they're like, yes, we can go and save everybody if we just do it this way. And so that's what they do. And they make a plan and they go back to Grace Field. And then next thing you know, Isabella got all of the mothers to turn and be like, we're saving these children. Okay. And then what's his face? Then what's his face shows up, whatever his name, Rattray, whatever his name was. Pete, I don't even remember which Rattray it is, because there's a bunch of Peeta Rattray, and he's crazy and maniacal. And he's like, I'm, you know, whatever. And then the kids beat him and they're like, we're going to go anyway. And then he's like, fine. And then he kills himself. Okay. This is all stupid. I'm not saying there are parts of this that do happen. Okay. There are parts of this that actually happen, but it's so meaningless without half of the story that they cut out. And I mean, they cut out like 90% of the anime, of the manga, since leaving the farm. So yeah, like they literally
reading that about the that they cut out the whole, essentially the fight with the queen. Like they took that whole,
they make
mention of it in a you know, kind of like a flash forward type of
slideshow.
Yeah, a slideshow where they're like, you see the queen and then you see her defeated. I'm like, wow, that was mad fast. It's all 3 seconds. Okay, all right.
It doesn't even make sense. Like none of it is even. It's not even like chronologically correct. And so some of the things that I even noticed while we were watching, I was like, they were doing scenes and I was like, did y'all mess this up on the cutting floor? Because like there was just stuff that seemed to happen that shouldn't have happened yet. And then it happens and you're like, what? Okay, let me just let all that go. But the fact that at the end, apparently what's her face says she made a new promise. I don't, whatever. They go to the human world. They just randomly show up in New York. It doesn't make any sense. They're just there. They're just in New York. And then a few of them are like, well, we're going to stay so that we can finish what we started. So what did you start? Like your job was to escape. Okay. And then they go back and then they become some sort of human diplomats to like change the world. Topple the queen. There's a dragon. There's a dragon. sitting somewhere, and then there's some things, and then there's some people bowing, and then apparently like Mujica gets a crown or some, I don't even know. You see Sanju doing whatever, and then the old person, the old man with the daughter, and then it's over. And then they're older. They end up back in New York. Isabella has a baby. Like I don't even what. Okay, and then it's over. Okay. And then it's over. It's done. And I was like, oh, you couldn't have ended better. You couldn't have ended not better sooner. I need this to be done. Now, we've gotten that out of the way, right?
Yeah.
I need to go back in time and tell you the things that they skipped that really, really, really make this not make any sense. And something else that I really wanted to discuss, because it's one thing just saying what happened in the story and just being like, oh, this is what's different from the manga and this is what's different in the anime, because that's actually irrelevant. Because one of the things I really wanted to discuss was how poorly the story actually took a turn, just in a general sense. Like you had such a good story from the jump, and then what very, very, very seemed like an introspection to the way that we as humans treat animals in the meat industry. And we talked about that the first time. We talked about that because a lot of people were saying that back then when season one came out. They're like, I think one of the articles had said, oh, it'll make you look at veganism differently. And it was just like, this is so good, because the fear that was installed in these children, and I even said it to my sister who like doesn't watch any anime, and I was like, yo, can you literally imagine us living on a, like, we don't know what goes on outside of this planet. Like, we don't know what goes on in the dimension that's higher than us. We could just be entertainment, okay? But my point is, could you imagine being lied to your whole life and growing up in some amazing environment and then realizing that you were literally just food? And for other people who may not know this, like people have talked, I think vegan type things have mentioned about pig farming, how pigs are extremely intelligent. I think they're what, number 4 on the like intelligent list of animals or something.
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's like, you know, chimpanzees and then like orangutans, you know, like whatever, great apes and then something else. And then like pigs are like 4th or something. They're extremely intelligent. And they've done studies to like show that, and I hope I'm not misquoting this, but I learned this like long time ago, where they said like pigs know that they're about to get slaughtered. Like some animals don't, but pigs are raised on farms and they are very, very, very aware, and they have a lot of distress. And it's like, it's very sad to kind of think of that. Mind you, I don't eat pork for real. Like I don't really like it, but it's kind of really, like, sad to think about it in that manner. Like, I understand that, you know, especially if you're a Christian, the Bible says that you were given dominion over all animals and kill and eat and stuff like that. And in other religions, it's the same. But it's kind of sad when you sit there and think like these animals are not, it's not even just that they're helpless, but their sole purpose of being raised, like the, like, this is a farming industry. You're intentionally raising them to kill them. And then they are aware right. that they're about to die. Like, and they feel anxiety and stress because they know they're about to be killed. And then hearing about how inhumane the like slaughter industry is for pigs and cows. So it's like taking that into your brain, you're like, wow, that actually is really scary, because especially if that could happen to us. And then you think about, sorry, I think I lost my train of thought. I was going to correlate that to something else. But anyway, since my brain just shut off for a moment, I just wanted to like put that out there, that that's really where the first season seems to be taking us. But humans are intelligent enough to plan a great escape. And one of the differences is that typically there's not another pig facilitating the murder of all the other pigs. Right. Okay. Like, so there is a difference, and that's under, there's definitely a difference. However, if there was like, if there was a more, a higher predator over us, then that's exact. Oh, I remember now what I was trying to correlate it to. Castlevania. We loved Castlevania. Remember right. how they were trying to farm humans? The vampires were yeah. trying to farm the humans. It's the same thing. And, you know, those humans were trying to fight back, saying, we're not going to be raised for food, which is interesting because the Volturi in Twilight, they had humans who were willing to sacrifice themselves. Like, it could turn into an entire religion where humans are willing to sacrifice themselves for their predator. I'm putting things into perspective of how right. things
are viewed.
It's extremely wild.
They've had a ton of places to go with this.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. the sky's the limit. After the first season, there's so many like just critical cultural things that you could just spill out and have something profound mm-hmm. To say. And from what you're saying is like the neither the anime or the manga actually said anything great.
They didn't. They stop that whole like argument. It ends after the whole Goldie Pond thing. So let me explain Goldie Pond for anybody who doesn't who didn't read the manga and like if you want to read the manga, please do. But it's just you're just going to end in disappointment. One of the only things I think about reading the manga for anybody for real is. If you want to write a fanfic or if you want to create an alternate, like, because I know people who do this and like, I'm even trying to do it myself, but like, I have a friend who literally just adapts thing. And then there's that one girl, she's like a famous author now. That's actually what she does. She takes other stories and adapts them. And then it's like bomb. So if somebody wanted to literally take this skeleton and then take it in a completely new direction and make it longer so that it's better, please do, because even though this manga was long, objectively it was long, but it needed to be long because most of the pages involved a lot of internalized thinking, like Ray talking to himself, Emma solving problems. And yeah. Like that's what we loved so much about the first season. These kids were racking their genius brains. It was full of problem solving. It was, to me, it was not a kid's anime. It just had kids in it. This was, I mean, I would definitely say, you know, teenagers could watch it if they're not going to get scared at night. But like, I felt like this was really geared towards adults, especially.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Adults are sitting there, the ones who are deciding to be vegan or not, you know, like, and trying to figure out if they want to raise their families vegan or not. You know, like, it just felt like it was geared towards adults. But then the second half comes and it's like, this is just for kids because it's just so idealistic. It just like there was violence with the whole Goldie Pond thing. Again, I'm about to get to it, but like the anime, it just seemed like there was no more killing, no more violence. And one of the reasons I feel that way is because, well, I think that they didn't have money. It's very clear, even though they did that one, the one monster, they did him in complete CGI. And it just looked so cheap. Like, I hated the animation for season 2. Yeah, it was trash. So action animation is expensive. And I think we can understand that. And that's probably clearly why the season 2 was the way it was. And then they used still shots at the end, which is stupid. But
Seemed like it was a outside of it just being a bad story, but not having enough money to prolong the season. Like, we just got to get it in. Because most people just, it gets canceled. So, yeah. And that's what I was going to say before. I was like, at the very least, it did that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like, I did hear, and this is apparently true, but, like, anime sales are, anime is really to boost manga sales. That's really the whole purpose. Because we all know, like, manga comes out first, and then they do the anime. And then, like, the whole intention of the anime is literally just to get more people to read the manga. And so since the manga had already completed, there's this is what people have said. I've read this and I'm like, okay, well, maybe that's why they did it. Okay, whatever. Who cares? Moving on. Okay. I'm sorry. I have to talk about Goldie Pawn. This is important to me because I feel like just like in Game of Thrones just like in A Song of Ice and Fire, I feel like the story is getting too hefty for George Martin to finish. There's so much story, and I think he's having a hard time directing it into the vein it's supposed to go into, and I feel like that's right. Also what happened here. The author doesn't say that. He just says, the author apparently said he just wanted people to take what they took from it, and it could mean anything. And he said that he didn't want to, like, he wasn't trying to feed people the veganism thing. He wasn't trying to feed people the monarchies type thing or capitalism. He said he wasn't trying to do that. He just wanted people to take away what they took away from it. And I'm sitting here like, well, that's really ridiculous. I don't mean you should put stuff down people's throats. I just mean that I feel like your work should have a purpose, at least for you. That's why you're creating it. And so it was just like, it felt like you threw in a bunch of ideas and said, okay, people here, eat. And it was like, well, no, none of us like tofurkey. None of us like, what's that thing? A turducken. We don't like turducken. Like, you, that's what you gave us, turducken. Moving on. Goldie Pond. Okay. I just got to say this. Because this is what you missed, Kenny.
Okay.
You missed them escaping from the farm, being pursued, falling. I can't remember because it felt like it was a long time ago. They fell. Remember those vines that were in that they saw? They fell into those. Like, half of the team went missing. They couldn't find them. And then they all fell underground and realized that they were about to be eaten by carnivorous trees. It was actually extremely dramatic. They had to figure out how to get out of there. It was a real ordeal. But they cut that from the show. And it's fine because they cut stuff knowing that the people are going to survive. So they're just like, okay, we don't need to go through that. But that's literally right. What happened. That was their real first trial. Like, oh my God, we're about to get eaten by carnivorous trees. How the hell do we get out of here? And then they had to use the book to help them get out. A storybook to help them figure these things out. So, you know, Sanju and Mujica do come, they save them, they help them, that kind of stuff, that all happens, but it's too fast. Like with Sanju telling them about the promise, it's so, so, so much more detailed. Like, there were seven families involved. Like, they're, okay, so you've got the humans that are fighting the demons because there's just too much war. Demons were enjoying eating humans. Humans didn't like being eaten. So they were just all out war for such a very, very long time until finally it was just like, we've got to stop this. And a promise was forged and that the humans could go safely off to their new world. But the demons were like, that's not, you know, we still need demons. And then there was this one family. Something happened. It was actually that this family did something really bad. The Ratri clan.
Yeah, they betrayed.
Yeah.
Because the way the treaty was supposed to happen, it didn't happen that way. Mm-hmm. And in order to get more power, the Ratri family betrayed the other families, and that's you find out. I believe you find out that their families were the ones that were made to be basically bred. Essentially.
Yeah, they were. Mm-hmm, yeah, and so because you know, and the promise said only farming. You can't wildly hunt. You cannot wildly hunt humans. It's against the promise. You can only raise them on farms. And right. And so the Ratri clan had the ability to go between both worlds. So this is something that I actually think is a mistake, like a fatal mistake in the writing. I think it would have been more interesting for this to be a demon world where humans are existing and trying to find their own. I think it would have been easier to write. But one of the reasons I don't approve of this is because it, sorry, again, I just, my brain not working. I kind of lost my train of thought here, but I did not like this idea that you could pass between the human world and the demon world, and that there was this apparent God that you, like, who is this God? And I'm saying that because there's really not anything, there's not much, there's not enough in the story to really feed. Like, yes, there is religion, the demons have a religion and stuff. But if that is the case, then is this God only a God of the demons? Who is the God of the humans? Because there's nothing that explains that humans have a religion. And so why would this God, like, what's the benefit for this God to split the world? Because the God seems like a demon. Like, if you remember at the end of the show, you see Emma standing in front of a dragon. And then the little person floating in the air, that's the God. So it doesn't make sense. If the God is a demon, what is the benefit of?
Yeah, it would just subjugate the earth.
Exactly. So it makes no sense. And then just the idea that, you can forge a new promise if you meet these expectations. So there's a lot of things that happen in the manga where they have to do all these things so that they're able to forge a new promise. And it's like, again, why? So again,
Emma have to like lose her memory or some junk?
She loses her memory. And again, it's so foolish because Emma loses her memory. She has to, you have to, be willing to trade off something. You have to be willing to sacrifice. Emma makes she does all the things. So they have to solve a bunch of puzzles. And apparently I think the author thought, if we make them solve puzzles, it'll be just like in the beginning when they had to solve puzzles. No, this was like a fucking treasure hunt. And the beginning was like, oh my God, we're about to die. Demons are going to eat us one by one. We're going to die. We need to get out of here. In this, it was just like they were literally going from point A to point B to point C to pick up puzzle clues and solve riddles, which it was just dumb. It did not hold weight. And so anyway, by the end, Emma, she forges a new promise with this God person that we don't know what he's called because we can't read demon letters. And they just have to meet everybody has to get to the same place and blah, blah, blah. So once everybody passes through to the human world, Emma's cost was that she cannot live amongst them. That's the cost. She cannot, she gives up the one thing that she always wanted, which was to be with her family for their safety. But she still gets sent to the new world. And so when they realize the promise, because they get sent over there and then she gets sent somewhere else or whatever, they spend the next, I don't know how many years looking for her. They find her. When they see her, they're like, Emma, it's us. And she's with her adoptive father or whatever. And he's like, I don't know who you people are. She's like, I don't know who you people are. And they're like, Emma, it's us. You grew up with us. You love us, X, Y, and Z. And then she's like, I don't know who you guys are, but I feel like I'm supposed to be with you. The end. And then it ends. And I'm like, what? Like, this is, you literally went from an adult an adult manga to a baby manga. Like, 5-year-olds would be like, yay.
Wow.
I'm like, what? It's like, how is that a consequence? There's no consequence. She loses her memory, but then she still loves them. She's like, oh my God, you guys are amazing. I love you. Like, I'll make that promise. I would love to forget about demons. Okay, like she made out the best out of all of them. She probably won't have nightmares, and the rest of them will for the rest of their lives. Okay, let's talk about the humanitarian effort. Were there any, now that all these people showed up from some other place and the senses of the world is now all messed up, you know, because some people just have showed up. Like, do other people on Earth even know about this demon world? Do other humans know that this thing exists? There's no information about that. The only thing they tell you is that there was some war and that all borders have been
It doesn't make any sense. It's just weird. And then you have these people, like, I don't know, 100 people, I don't know, have shown up now in the world. In the manga, it actually mentions coronavirus, because when so Norman does say, like, you know, what's so good about the other world? Or it may not be Norman. It could have been Hugo. I don't know. Somebody had says, well, what do you think is going to be so good about the human world? And then, like, you see coronavirus is written on the wall. Like somebody's writing coronavirus on there. So it's like they're coming to a mangled world, because the author was still writing during COVID.
Right.
And so again, like when they all show up there, it's like, so does anybody know they're coming? Was there a refugee center for them? Like in Handmaid's Tale, they got a refugee center in Canada when people are crossing over from Gilead. How are they supposed to survive? Are they literally supposed to, like, do they speak the same language? I mean, we know they do because of the books and stuff. The books were being brought over from the old world. But when they show up, like, what are they going to, I know they're smart. We know they're all geniuses, but like, seriously.
Yeah. You they have literally no form of identification. There's like hundreds of you.
Yeah.
There's also full adults, like, cause the mothers, they're like adults, but they don't have any type of identification. And if people don't know about the demons, how are you going to explain that? Like, where did you people come from?
We're aliens.
What nationality? Like, there's so many. There's a lot. And I, there's things that I can kind of get over. Like, I watched a movie recently about someone like losing their memory. Like, it had to do with time travel and them bumping into each other. And then like, it kind of, the world just kind of fixes their relationship as they go along, but there's no guarantee, and it works because of what the stakes were. But if you had to go through all this stuff, puzzles, and you had to promise to a god, not just like the time fixing itself, but like you actually had to, like, you had to give up something. It just seems weird that it's just everything is melded together without any type of consequence or any type of anything.
None.
With the story, because it's, you didn't start that way. It was extremely detailed.
Yep.
Like how they're raised, how long it took them to, you know, before they're picked out of the group, you know, what were the trials like, all the tests that they had to take, even the experimentations, because they were trying to get away from the farms to get something that was a little bit more conducive to making all the children extremely smart right away, so then they could just eat them all. Like, you know, just so many different things that they were, you know, doing or showing detail wise. Even the books, how there were coded messages to teach them about the world, so they can, when they do leave, they know where to go. All this information, and then towards the end, it's like, nah, that's not important. Just go.
Important.
With it. Like, no, that's not what you set up.
That's not what you set up. You disappointed us. Like, everybody's soul just dropped to the floor, because even in the parts of the manga where, you know, you're getting closer to the end and you're like, oh my God, this is so bad. But then you're introduced to genocidal Norman and his crew, and you're introduced to five clans of demons. Like, it's political. It ends up getting extremely political. It talks about, you know, we're in a monarchy. So let me talk about Goldie Pond real quick before we run out of time. But like, Goldie Pond is this place that William Rattray told them to go to. Sorry, William Minerva told them to go to. Okay. Right. Because they do go to the shelter. They find after getting out of the branches, the trees that try to eat them, they do make it to the shelter. It's not an easy thing, because they did realize that the pen was showing coordinates, but the pen was designed so that people couldn't figure stuff out easily. That's the whole point. Because if people could just pick up a pen and figure it out as easy as they did, then they'd be caught easy, which they effing were in the show. They were literally caught after like 2 days in there because they were stupid. I mean, well, they weren't stupid, but because all the things were lowered. It wasn't them that was dumb. It was the writers. But anywho, and again, things that were not characteristic, like even Ray writing the coordinates down on the tree. Like, I understand he was under duress and stuff, but Ray is smart. He's been under duress multiple times. Like, it doesn't make sense for him to make that.
He
fatal
removed his face. Own ear.
His own ear. And he does something dumb like this under duress. It doesn't mean it's out of character. It almost makes me feel like the person who wrote the end of the story is not the person who started it. I firmly believe that. People said that about Hunger Games too. They were like, yo, in Hunger Games, the first book, she had a co-writer, and that co-writer left for the second two books, which is why the second two books are not like the first. But anywho, that's ridiculous. So you have the they make it to the shelter, right? They're like, oh my God, this place is amazing. Woo-hoo-hoo. They open a door. There is a grown-ass man. It might scare you while you're reading. Grown-ass man sitting in there. So you remember the scene where they went into that room with the TVs and there was a teacup and tin cookies? Yeah, there's supposed to be a man in there. A grown-ass man. Want to know who that man was? That man was an adult. They've never seen an adult man before in their lives. They don't exist. Men don't live that long. Men get plucked by the time they're 12. This was a grown-ass man. Where the hell did he come from? He escaped from a farm 13 years ago. This is a grown-ass man. And they're sitting here like, what? He is half crazy. Well, 75% crazy because he's been alone for 13 years and all his friends died. So he also was part of a mass escape. Same as Hugo. He's actually pretty damn awesome. And it sucks that they cut him out. It really, really sucks that they cut this character out, because without Hugo, then you don't have the other violent things that occur. So remember when they were teaching themselves how to make bows and arrows? Screw bows and arrows. That shelter was jam-packed with artillery. I'm talking AKs. I'm talking M16s. I'm talking grenade launchers. I'm talking 9s, 45s, 22s. That place was stocked Smith and Wesson, lock, stock, and barrel. Okay, that was a real shelter. A real shelter. Not some little place where they could just grow plants. That place was immense. Okay. And they were there for a long period of time before they got caught. But this guy, he had like a nervous breakdown because, again, all his friends got killed. So he realizes that these kids have broken out of the farm too. He is like, okay, well, he really doesn't want them to be around him. He also realizes that they are extremely smart. He takes Norman and Emma on a suicide mission. So he realized he wants to go and get his friends. And he takes them with him, thinking that they were going to get killed. He's like, if I take them with me, I can probably survive. They'll get killed. And that's what he wanted. Because remember, we were talking about demons. They live in the woods. Okay. Right. That's why the woods are scary. That's why Sanju told them to stay away from water and stay away from the woods. Why did these kids end up in the woods like six more times? On the show, I'm sitting here. Did he not just say like in episode 2, stay away from the woods, and then they were in the woods again? I was like, this makes no sense. But the guy Hugo wants to use them to kind of get killed so that he can get away. And he even says to them, which is really interesting. He was like, so pick your artillery, like pick your guns. And they're small. They're kids. They're small. You know, they're 13 years old or whatever, 12 years old. And they were smart and they ended up picking little guns, because one of the things that they were told, do not shoot at a demon, A, if you don't intend to kill it. Do not shoot at a demon if you don't think you can kill it. Demons regenerate. And wherever you, and if you shoot them, they're just going to get mad. So if you can't kill it, run. That's what Sanju was supposed to be telling them too. If you need to run, you will not win. If you can't kill it a certain way, you will not win. And again, this information was important because the demons wear masks for a reason. Their eyes are their weak points. And if you shoot them in a specific eye, the one dead center, you'll kill them. All of this was just thrown away in the anime. You don't even get to know these details. Mujica had said to Emma, find the seven walls. That was part of the whole puzzle, the puzzle finding thing, so that they could find a way to the human world. We don't get that. So anyway, Hugo is taking Rei and Emma. He's teaching them stuff. They're realizing how to walk stealthily. They're climbing in trees because the demons are typically on the ground, the wild ones. They have like eyes all over the place. They're crazy. And they typically like travel in packs. And they had some very, very, very scary instances, but they managed to kill like the ones that attacked them. And they had to use a map. He even asked them, what way would you rather go? Would you rather go this way that's longer? Would you rather go this way that's shorter, that has more demons? Like, he gave them options. by the time he got to this point where he was like, these kids are actually okay. I don't really want to get them killed. Let's turn around and go back. Emma gets kidnapped and she gets taken to a place called Goldie Pond. Goldie Pond is the worst place in the world. It used to be a shelter and it is now a hunting ground for humans. It's an illegal hunting ground. So even here, we're still carrying on with the idea that humans could be poachers, like how humans go, asshole humans go and hunt giraffes and tigers for no reason, just to do it. Just for the fun of it. And that's what this breeding, this hunting ground was. It's in every way disgusting. It really, really makes you like, it doesn't even matter if you're not into the whole like animal, cruelty, you know, PETA type stuff. If you're not into that, that's fine. But if you were a human and you were being hunted like this, it was Hunger Games again. But you're not getting shot at by other humans. These are massive 8-10 foot tall demons that can run a football field in 2.5 seconds. Like, it's scary. And they get hunted, I think it's like every other weekend or something. So can you imagine like living in Goldie Pond as a human and you are okay for a few days and then the music starts playing and then the demons show up and start killing you. And they're there for 3 days. They get to hunt for 3 days. And you just need to stay alive. And
that's just bananas.
It's insane. And some of the demons, they like easy prey. So they go after the little kids. And then other demons, they like hard play. Like they love the chase. And so the one, Lewis, he is the worst one. He's the one who kind of sits back and watches how good the demons fight, like how good the humans fight. And he's the one who loves to play with his food. So he does something really horrible, like with Emma. Emma's trying to save everybody because, you know, that's Emma. And her actions get two little kids killed. And that's really sad, you know, for her.
Is this, so in this case, is it good that they cut this out of the anime?
It's good because they clearly didn't have the money to animate it. But these were going to be some amazing battle scenes. It's not good that they cut it out because this also kind of I don't want to say prolonged, but it made sense with the original story, the Goldie Pond arc. It did. Like, it had scary ass looking demons and it showed how powerful they were. And it was like, you're sitting on the edge of your seat. Like, are they going to make it? Like, who's going to die? Because you definitely, you know,
and so it's like revert it back to what it was before.
Exactly. People, they were in a small setting and people died. They did die. Like, I think something to hammer here is that Emma kept saying that she wanted to save everyone. That's what she wants to do. She tried to save everyone again. She tried to save these little kids by offering herself up because she's older than them. And she tells the demon, come fight me, because she knows how to shoot now. She's super smart now. She knows how to shoot a gun really well. And the demon's like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll come for you. But he lied. He let her separate herself from the little kids, and then he went and ate them. He went and killed them. And then he looked at her because she's upset about it. And he's like, how does that make you feel? Because I love pissing off my prey. Because then they do stupid things, or they do things that make it fun for me to hide. He's like, I like it when it's difficult. He's like, I want you to shoot me. I want you to maim me. I want you. Like, it's literally 10th degree disgusting. You know what I mean? Like, right. And I mean, it could be animated really well. It was drawn extremely well in the manga. Like, this was a good arc. People died. But then again, at the same time, there were people that I think should have died that actually lived. It was kind of weird. And it was just like, you got hurt really bad. Why are you still alive? So the story is still going downhill because it doesn't get better. Like, they leave the thing and then it just slowly goes downhill. But here, at least it kind of stayed good for a while. It did. And you learned more things. Like, you learned that there were more people out there. There's older people out there. You learned about a lot of the facilities because they had this really big guy who looked like Norman and he had the same similar numbers on his neck like Norman. So Emma was thinking that, oh my God, that could be Norman. And he got tested on.
Right.
And so there's a lot of meaningful information that happens in this whole arc. They also find an elevator there, and the elevator to the new world. I mean, to the human world, but it no longer works. And they learn more stuff about the pen. Like these are other people who are existing, who are also have the same goal as Emma and the rest of them. So it's sad that this part got cut out. Also, you got to see one of the demons eat another demon. Like he ate his, I thought the girl was his lover, but I don't know. Somebody said she's his sister. I don't, whatever. But literally a demon eats another demon. And so you get to see more emotions with the demons. You also got to understand the hierarchy, because that the hunting ground, Goldie Pond, which like I said, used to be a shelter, it's now owned by one of these aristocrats. So this is where they introduce the aristocratic nature of the rest of the world. And it's almost like feudal Japan. Like it's so like Tokugawa all over again.
It makes total sense in the sense of them cutting it, because not only does it, this would have to be a third season.
Yeah.
And then if they weren't going to show any of the political stuff, they would have to cut it. But that's unfortunate, because there's a lot of interesting things at play there with like just learning about the other world, because you don't, unfortunately, the only thing we get to see about the other world, and you know, there's a brief flashback about some things that happen, but you just kind of, like you said, they go to New York and then they're just there. We don't know the correlation of anything. We don't know what anything is, you know what I'm saying? Like, we don't know any of the history except for what we were told, and it's very bare bones. So it's hard to really care about a lot of it, because you just kind of have to go with everything's normal over here. Like, really? Like, there's a whole world of demons. Like, how is everything normal over here?
Right.
You know, like, and then the fact that they live for so long, like one of the guys was like, you know, the promise was like 1,000 years. And then one of them was like, well, they were there when the promise was made. Yeah. It's like, oh, so they even live super long. So there's just this, all this time. And I can understand like the humans maybe forgot, you know, after a while, but there's no way that you have a door to a place.
Right.
That's like just to your regularness that people just like, were there sound signs? Were there should have been guards there. Like no one's allowed through this door. You know, there's so many missing bits and pieces that you would just expect to be there. Yeah. And yeah, it's unfortunate. It's definitely a huge shame.
It's a huge shame, because like, again, I say forget the anime at this point, because the anime, like if the anime is made to sell manga, the manga was over. And so the studio is not going to make any money off of this season, like it, because the real money comes from the manga, and they clearly just didn't see any. That makes me upset, because I'm sitting here like, why didn't you guys hire an entirely new writer? But maybe that's not the way things work in Japan. So
well, I don't know. It kind of depends, because I know like they feed off of each other. I know that with like Naruto, the Boruto series, and but then we also look at like Dragon Ball Z getting a new movie, and it's like in and of itself, the anime makes so much freaking money.
Yeah, that
it's not. The manga could just burn up, and they would be like, no problem, anime,
right?
Because that's essentially because they take their own. There's a whole Dragon Ball Z show that has nothing, is not canon at all. It has everything to do with a freaking mobile game, but it's working. You know what I'm saying? So like, I think it just, whoever was backing them, I know they were working with Cloverworks, which Japanese animation studio that does amazing stuff. And like, you know, if you've seen Fairy Tail or some of these other shows, they do a really good job. And I'm pretty sure they cost a lot. So it could have been just the funding, whoever is producing outside of Cloverworks, or if this was a like Cloverworks just by themselves. I don't know how, you know, because like there's other backing outside of just the animation studio.
Yeah.
I don't know who that would be. But if they were like, hey, Cloverworks cost a lot. So I know you wanted to have like 4 seasons. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't got Attack of Titan money. If you could just like in this, you know what I'm saying? And that's by the way. But even then, outside of the anime, the manga itself, from what you're telling me, didn't even if it had all that extra bit and all the extra story, it still didn't end well. So
nope,
it's like
it failed.
It was just doomed all the way around.
It was doomed all the way around. But what makes me upset is like there are thousands of stories that are bad that are objectively bad. For example, The Devil Wears Prada movie is amazing. I think I don't know anybody who doesn't like that movie. It's a good movie. It's entertaining. It's fun. It's good. The Devil Wears Prada, the book, is one of the worst books I've read. I hated that book. I mean, it was trash. It was just poorly written. I don't even understand why that book was on the New York Times bestsellers list. It just wasn't good. And mind you, let me not be a mean person. I'm not really a writer. But the author, that was her first book. So let me give the woman a break, right? But some of the critiques on that was just like, your point of view is such a skewed, uppity, white Jewish woman's view. Like, people are just like, ew. And it came across on the pages of the book. It was just like, ugh. Like finger in the throat type thing. It was just like, ugh. Like, gross. But the movie completely redeemed the book. Like, the movie made people want to go read the book. And then you're like, oh my God, this book is trash. The purpose of me saying that is reading the manga, I feel like, oh my God, this is bad. Okay, anime, it's your turn to make it better. Because the same thing happened with Attack on Titan. The manga got terrible. I told you, it was just awful. Right. There was this whole period of time where I was like, this is bad. And then the anime came and they took season two in a different, I was so happy with how they did it. They really, really redeemed themselves. So it's so upsetting to know, like, again, I'm saying this over and over again. I do not like the way the manga went. I think that the manga ruined itself. It did. And, yeah. We literally could talk for two more episodes on all of the fine details of this show, because there is so much content there's so much content in this manga that does not get developed. And it's disappointing because it could have been one of those super long running ones. It could have been longer than Inuyasha, which was extremely long until it got beaten out by Bleach, you know?
Right.
And just saying that because, like, even with the aristocracy stuff and the capitalism stuff, it could have been developed. The aristocracy, it ends up being, like, I'm saying this thing about Goldie Pond as it's important because the aristocracy part happens. Like, the queen gets killed because the queen is a glutton. The queen wants to continue eating all the children. She loves it. She's a glutton. She has eaten so many people. She ate Krone. She ate Sister Krone. She's the one who ate Sister Krone. It's important to understand that this queen has been in power. Sanju is her younger brother. Sanju also wants to eat humans. He said, it's what's so annoying. Sanju literally says, not only in episode, what one was it? But he says it in the manga, he cannot wait for the day that he can eat humans again. Because if these humans that escape from the farms become wild and start raising themselves and start, he's like, we can hunt them again. That's not breaking the promise. He was so ready for that to happen. That's why he was helping them. He wasn't helping them because he liked them. He was helping them because he hates capitalism. He's against the farms and he wants to hunt humans freely and eat them because they're delicious. he's basically representing a human who wants to go deer hunting. Like, can't wait till hunting season is open again because I want to kill some deer and make some venison chili. That's what he's saying. It's the same
so
shit.
Horrible. So, on that note, we're gonna close. Venison chili.
It's really good. It's delicious. I've had it. It's good.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. If you stayed with us the whole time, we appreciate you. If you're listening on YouTube at United Front Gaming, definitely subscribe and hit that notification bell so you know when we drop our next episode. If you're listening elsewhere, whether it be Google Podcasts or iTunes or Spotify, feel free to add us to your RSS feed, subscribe, all that good stuff, and make sure to follow us at TheGameCast1 on Twitter. Again, so you're up on all the new content that's coming out. A lot of different things to talk about, as you can see, even things that came out, you know, shows that came out a year ago. And so we're never going to stop talking. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
I have some plans in terms of potential special guests, like we did with, David F. Sandberg. Definitely go check out episode 80 if you haven't checked that out. super dope interview with David F. Sandberg. If you don't know who that is, you should. It's the director of Shazam, Lights Out, Annabelle Creation, and Shazam 2. Solid, solid.
Known as Pony Smasher.
Yes, Pony Smasher on Twitter. That's, he doesn't really smash ponies. That's just, you know, a moniker. Anywho, definitely check that out. We have a lot of stuff planned, a lot of things going on this year, but more so than that, we just want to talk about a lot of the content that is being, you know, delivered through these different streaming platforms. Hey, Netflix, you know what I'm saying? If you need, you know, you want to sponsor someone, you know, just hit us up. But there's just like a lot of content coming out. Speaking of which, I learned that there's an anime for Spriggan that's dropping on Netflix. And the thing
is, so exciting.
It's dope because there was only one other adaptation from the manga, and that was the movie that I actually own. I have it on DVD.
I love that movie.
And so the fact that they're actually making it into a like a full-fledged anime is really freaking cool. I already pitched a story to IGN, so I will be covering that when that comes out. But yeah, it's I'm happy. So like there's a lot of stuff. It's constant. It's nonstop. And because we're big nerds, we want to talk about all of it. So if you have any shows, video games, movies, whatever the case may be that you want us to talk about and we have access to it, definitely let us know and we will add that to the docket. Beyond that though, I think that's it for housekeeping.
So everybody just remember to be kind, wash your hands, wash your faces, wash your butts, wash your whole bodies, please. Just,
yes.
You know, it's sometimes it's hard to do it because, you know, quarantine, pandemic, whatever, but just try. And, you know, wear your masks, please. I know they're lifting mask mandates in places, but COVID is still out here because they just said there's like two more variants. So, yeah, get on that. Nobody wants no Lambda because that's what they were doing in Promised Neverland. We don't want Lambda. Anyway, so, yeah, that. And that's really it. Be kind, be nice, wear your mask, wash your hands, and bye-bye.